Vijana balava giriban dare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandanam Braja Janadanjanam Yasoda Nandanam Braja Janadanjanam Yamunatira Vanachari Ajamunatira Banachari.
Come on, do the students know this song?
Anjaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandanam Braja Janadanjanam Ajamunatira Banachari Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jai Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Simanas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Prem Sakaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Gopadam Ki Jai Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Sri Shiva Mahadev Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 14, Text Number 18. Title and Chapter, The Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Savashramam Upadayam. Svashramena kalatravam Vyasanar navam atyeti Jala yanar yatarnavam Savashramam upadaya Svashramena kalatravam Vyasana Navamatyeti. Jalayana Yatarvanam. Please chant. Okay, students. Sarva, all, ashram, social orders, upadaya, completing, sva, own, ashramena, by the social orders, kalatravan, a person living with a wife. Vyasana Arnavam, the dangerous ocean of material existence. Atyeti, one can cross over. Jalayanai, with seagoing vessels. Yata, as. Arnavam, the ocean. Translation. As one can cross over the ocean with seagoing vessels, one can cross over the dangerous situation of the material ocean by living with a wife. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are four social orders for cooperation in the endeavor of liberation from material existence. The orders of brahmacharya are pious student life, household life with a wife, retired life, and renounced life. All depend for successful advancement on the householder who lives with a wife. This cooperation is essential for the proper functioning of the institution of the four social orders and the four spiritual orders of life. This Vedic Varnashram system is generally known as the caste system. The man who lives with the wife has a great responsibility in maintaining the members of the other social orders, the brahmacharis, the vanaprastras, and the sannyasis. Except for the grihasthas, or the householders, everyone is supposed to engage in spiritual advancement of life. And therefore, the brahmachari, the vanaprastra, and the sannyasi have very little time to earn a livelihood. They therefore collect alms from the grihasthas, and thus they secure the bare necessities of life and cultivate spiritual understanding. By helping the other three sections of society cultivate spiritual values, the householder also makes advancement in spiritual life. Ultimately, every member of society automatically becomes spiritually advanced and easily crosses the ocean of nescience. Om Agyana Timidandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yanatasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayadev Krim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinitarinam.
Pavancha kapatirubhyascha kripa sindhu vahebha cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Shri Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. And in honor of today's appearance of Sri Mahadev, Ohe Kshetrapala Shive Tumadoya Maya, Krishna Bhakti Deha Maya Hahira Shiraya. O Kshetrapala, Shiva, protector of the Dham, you are certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me love for Krishna. Varamika vinatape punat kamam bibhashanat bhagavat achutyam bhaktim tat pareshwa tata tvayi. O Shivaji, Shankar, you are completely free of desires. You therefore fulfill the desires of your devotees. Seeing you, I am offering this prayer. Please fulfill my desire. Let me have unflinching faith and devotion to Sri Krishna. So this verse today continues with the conversations between Kadama Muni and Devahuti. The verse is very significant. Well, first of all, you know, in the Sanskrit here, we have the opening word, sarva ashrama. Sarva meaning all, and ashram meaning the different divisions of spiritual life, social life also, but particularly like that. And this means that the instructions coming here pertain to all of us. So the example given is of a boat. I'm just curious for the students here, how many of you have been in a boat on the ocean? Oh, a decent handful of you. How many of you have been by yourself in a boat out in the water? So when I used to live on Fort Myers Beach, I had a friend that lived in the north in Connecticut, and he kept a small sailboat. It was called a Kingfisher. So two, maybe three-person sailboat on the beach and at my place, and I kept an eye on it, and then I would take it out from time to time. And so we'd go out into the Gulf of Mexico, and you would be out there, just you and this boat and the water. But there was some sense of safety, some comfort that I'm not in danger here, because we've seen the factual evidence. Many people have gone out on boats. Many people have been in the water for some time and come back very safely. Okay, so I can do this. This vessel will get me from point A to point B. Now, sometimes I'd blow up the air mattress and then I'd lay on the air mattress and float out. A little more dangerous. Matter of fact, one time I got caught in the waves and I was a bit far from the sand from the, and I got a little concerned. I was a little afraid, quite frankly, you know. Panicked almost, you know. I had to kind of get the swimming going, get the, you know, because the air mattress, what protection do you have on an air mattress? It doesn't give any, you know. And then you have these big ocean liners. I don't know if you've seen pictures of them recently, but they're like, you know, the size of an entire block of New York City. You know, it's like a floating city, you know, 20-story vessel with theme parks and all kinds of things in them. And we feel relatively safe in that. Very comfortably so. Of course, we can't mention that without speaking of Prabhupada's example of the Titanic. And Prabhupada would say, all of your wealthiest and most powerful members of your society were on that boat, but it did not save them. So generally speaking, that is the process. That if we want to cross an ocean, seagoing vessel, a boat that will actually secure our passage across that. Now, of course, we can take that phrase and we can apply it to the understanding of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is considered the vessel that will transport us over the material ocean of birth and death. This is our goal, is not to have to take another birth again. I was just told something very interesting. My four-year-old granddaughter was sitting with her mother and grandparents there in Australia, and they were reading some book about a dog, and my granddaughter spoke up and said, "I'm never taking my birth again as a dog." So this is the advantage of having the shelter of a spiritual master, that exact desire to not take our birth again by being able to cross over that ocean. I mean, if you stand on the coast in Miami or Jacksonville and you look out, there's just water as far as you can see. And we know from maps and satellite pictures and whatever that that ocean goes all the way to Africa, all the way to Europe, all the way to England, very, very far distance. We have no possibility of stepping across it. But when one takes shelter of the spiritual master, that distance becomes just like the water in the hoof print of a cow. Now, if we go around the farm here, we have so many cows, and you see their hoof prints from time to time. How big is it? Maybe this big? The size of my hand? Okay, maybe a really big ox, okay, the size of two hands. But that's it. So if I ask you, step over that, can you do that? Can you step over the hoof print of a cow? Can you jump over it very easily? You don't even have to get a running, oh, I'm going to do this, okay. I got to really get a running start and jump high in the air. No, you just step over it. Very simple like that. So this is the process of taking shelter of a spiritual master. Crossing that vast ocean of material existence becomes like that. Now, Prabhupada makes point in here very specifically about the different social orders. I can safely say, and I don't think this will come as any surprise to anyone, not only A, is our community 99.99999% householders, but all of you sitting here, there is a 99.99999% that you'll also become householders. The number of brahmacharis to come sannyasis is dwindling, is smaller. In any element, even in a perfect society, there's only a small portion like that. And so the householders are the prominent makeup of society. This means living with the husband, living with the wife. Now, you know, back in the early days when we were young brahmacharis, we thought this was just the worst curse in the world. But in reality, we were very happy that there were householders around. Two doors down from where the temple was that I grew up, there was one householder couple named Kudandin and Savitri. And Savitri was a very, very nice devotee. And when she made lunch for her husband, she would step outside on the back porch every day and say, "If anyone is hungry, please let them come and take some prasadam." Shastra explains that this is what the householders should do before they eat. They don't just make the meal and then eat it. They don't just make the meal and offer it to Krishna and then eat it. They make the meal, offer it to Krishna, and then, is there any poor person that's hungry? Please come. And then they're fed, and then the householder eats. So it did not take very long for us brahmacharis to figure this out. And Savitri would step outside the back porch and say, "If there's anyone..." There'd be five brahmacharis at her steps, because she was a very good cook. And, you know, we had very nice prasadam in the temple. Our temple cook at that time was a very, very good cook. But, you know, this was some specialties that she made. So eventually her husband, Kudandin, said, "You have to go out the front door porch. They're expecting you near the back door porch. I can't feed the whole brahmachari ashram every day." So, but this is the responsibility of the householder. Now we see here, Prabhupada says something that might be a little startling to us. Except for the householders, and when we use the word except for, this means everybody but. So except for the householders, The brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis are supposed to engage in advancement of spiritual life. Wait a minute. Householders don't engage in advancement of spiritual life? Well, how's that? Well, it's because the householders have to work. They have responsibilities to meet the obligations of supporting a family, of providing for a home, of all these different things. You know, this is why you have so many of the members of this community have so many different types of occupations. You know, working in the different stores, or working their own businesses, or, you know, whatever it might be. Now, this does not mean, as Prabhupada's saying here, this is in a broader sense, but in a fine-tuned sense, looking at this, this doesn't mean that the householder doesn't do anything spiritual. I mean, I know many of your families, and I know your families all have altars in the home with deities. Prasadam is being cooked, bhoga is being cooked and offered to the deities of prasadam. Many of your families have kirtan programs in your home. So this simply means that the householder has an additional responsibility to cultivating their spiritual life, to providing for the rest of society. So by providing for the rest of society, this means supporting the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis. As Prabhupada says, who have very little time to earn livelihood and therefore beg alms from the grihasthas and secure the bare necessities of life. Simple living and high thinking. Excuse me. So this service that the householder does for the other three ashrams aids in their advancement. They get the benefit of that. Just like when the Purohit performs a fire jugga. The benefit of that fire jugga actually goes to the Purohit. They're the one reciting the mantras. They're the one igniting the fire. They're the one making the offering. So the benefit comes to them. At the conclusion of that ceremony, the sponsor, or what's called the yajamana, gives a donation to the Purohit. That donation can be money, it can be food grains, it can be cloth, it can be all the above, any of the above. And when that donation is given, the Purohit recites a mantra. And by the recitation of that mantra, the benefit he has acquired from doing that ceremony is now transferred to the householder who has sponsored it. So he's not keeping it for himself. He has the basic necessities. Some dakshin has been given. This is how they support themselves. And then the benefit of that is transferred. So this is one of the ways in which the householders benefit by the activities of the other social orders. Supporting the sannyasis, supporting the brahmacharis, supporting the vanaprasthas. We don't have so much experience with vanaprasthas now. I mean, we're beginning to see more and more as the first generation of Prabhupada disciples get older and older. We're beginning to see some vanaprasthas. But the point being that by supporting these orders, then the householders get nice benefit. So this is a very essential thing. Just like when the husband performs any spiritual activities, the wife gets 50% of the benefit. Now, I've heard some people say she gets 100% of the benefit, but come on, give the poor husband something, you know. So at any rate, the Shastra says 50% of the benefit. So the husband goes on pilgrimage, whatever benefit he accrues, 50% goes to the wife. If the husband sits at a fire juggle, whatever benefit he gets, 50% goes to the wife. So the husband and wife work together to take care of the rest of society. This is why the lady is called Mata, mother. Everyone addresses the ladies as mother. And this is why also that the householders refer to the rest of society as their sons, their daughters. So in this way, there's a connection that's there that assists them in being able to collectively work together. This is the importance of this word here, sarva ashrama, all the ashrams. They work together, and by working together, they're able to cross over that dangerous ocean, not just on a little floaty that you blow up with air, but in a very secure boat. And that very secure boat being the shelter of the spiritual master, the shelter of the spiritual master society. This is why Prabhupada always encouraged us to work within our society with each other. By working cooperatively with each other, we're able to see a very wholesome connection of all the different aspects of society. The students all here, boys, girls, young, some older, you know, all taken care of nicely. The school supported by the parents. The temple, how are we able to sit here with the nice lights on, fans going when it's too hot, beautiful flowers being offered to the deities, because the householders support the temple. The electricity bill in my house doesn't get paid just because I hope it does. I have to actually work and then send that money to the utilities company. And then the bill is paid and the electricity stays on. Similarly, here in the temple, the fact that we have lights on, the fact that we have a microphone that uses electricity means that there are householders supporting the temple, supporting the activities of the spreading of Krishna consciousness. So this is our obligation. This is our responsibility. And by doing this, we get that shelter. Now, it's importantly mentioned here in this connection how one can do that by living with a wife. Husband and wife together, Prabhupada used to say, husband and wife together means twice as much potency, twice as much service, twice as much protection. They serve each other. They protect each other. If one is fortunate to get a good spouse, then their life becomes very easy. And then by having a good spouse, one can have nice children. Now, of course, in this particular connection of this chapter, we're going to see a little bit down the road that the children were not necessarily so nice. Who knows who the two children that come out of this relationship are? Who can tell me one of them? Somebody that you probably wouldn't want to hang out with. Somebody that was solely responsible for an incarnation of the Lord like no other incarnation of the Lord. Huh? Is it louder? Srinidevi, but who is the demon? Hiranyakasipu. All right, and Hiranyakasipu had a brother. Who knows the brother's name? Hiranyaksha. So, unfortunately, these two children of Devahuti and Karama were not exactly the best kids. But all of you have a very, very different example, very different opportunity, very different facility available to you. And this is because of a husband and wife living together, raising nice children, supporting the school, supporting the temple, providing a community where easy access to Krishna consciousness is there. I was your age once. I know it's hard to believe, but yeah, once I was your age, Purushottam, just as young as you. And I didn't have the opportunities you have. You have the opportunities of knowing mantras. I walked in when my granddaughters were visiting. Let me see, Revati would have been 4 at the time. And I walked into the living room and she was sitting at the little table we had and she was stringing some beads. And she was, Namo, Namo, Tulasi Krishna Prehasi, Namo, Namo. I looked at her, I said, Revati, you know that song? And she looked at me with the most matter of fact, like, well, of course I do, Daddy, Grandpa. Of course I know that song. All devotees know that song. So this is the benefit of a nice, holistic community, that you have these opportunities. Instead of having to learn all kinds of nonsense things, you get to learn about these activities of the devotees, about the songs glorifying the devotees, about the shastras written by the devotees. So this is all very beneficial for you, and this is all due to the nice circumstance of husband and wife living together and being the foundation of the rest of society. Now, additionally today, we're speaking about Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is, of course, a wonderful devotee. We have very clear instructions from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narottam Das Thakur, from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, our own Srila Prabhupada, what to speak of in the Bhagavad Gita, except that we don't worship the demigods. Demigods are not worshipped, you know, for benefit. Dehi, dehi, dehi is the phrase. Please give me, please give me, please give me. So our worship is of a completely different style. Therefore, we understand that Lord Shiva is very special. Who knows what percentage of the qualities of Lord Vishnu, the living entity, has? Anybody know? Not exactly. The qualities of Lord Vishnu are there. Krishna's got 100% of the wonderful qualities. And then it breaks down from there. 96% Vishnu has. The Jiva has 76. But in between there is Lord Shiva, who has a special, special position. 84% of the same qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one of his particular qualities is his mercy, his blessings to others. And so worshiping Lord Shiva by the Vaishnavas is done for the purpose of increasing their devotion, as this verse here, O Kshetrapala. Kshetrapala means one who protects the Dham. Lord Shiva has this responsibility of protecting the holy places. You're certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me a brand new car. No. Okay. You're certainly very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me a big, big house. No, not that. Okay. Oh, I know what it is. You are very merciful. Being kind to me, please give me a very large bank account. Oh, some of you like that one. No, you are very kind. Please give me love for Krishna. Lord Shiva is described as Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu, as the topmost of Vaishnavas. What's a Vaishnava? Who can tell me what a Vaishnava is? Yes. Someone who worships Krishna. Yes, a devotee of the Lord. And Lord Shiva is the topmost of those devotees. And what does the devotee do? Oh, I've got Krishna Bhakti, I'm keeping it. Is that right? No, the devotee gives it. So Lord Shiva is very happy. Oh, you're worshiping me? Oh, let me give you love for Krishna. Or even beyond that, what's this last one here? Shriman Gopishwaram Vande Shankaram Karanam Mayam Sarva Klesha Haram Devam Vrindaranya Rati Padam. Please grant me spiritual love for Vrindavan. So these are the way that we approach Lord Shiva. Now, there are those who are followers of Lord Shiva devotedly that think Lord Shiva is the topmost personality. The topmost personality. But there's an interesting thing. This conversation was had with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the followers of Lord Shiva when he was touring in South India. Some of you may know that Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and where did he move to? Who can tell me where Lord Chaitanya moved when he took sannyas? No one? What city did Lord Chaitanya live in as a sannyasi? Well, I'll tell you a clue. The deity smiles a lot. Nobody? And, yes? Jagannath Puri, thank you very much. Yes, Jagannath Puri. So he stayed in Jagannath Puri only a very short time, very few months, and then he did a tour, because this is what a sannyasi does. He travels and preaches. So he did a tour of South India, and he came in touch with the followers of Lord Shiva. And so they said to him, oh, thank you for coming to Lord Shiva's temple. You know, Lord Shiva is the very topmost. He is the supreme. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very politely said, well, it's just one thing. We all accept that the Ganges is the foot wash of Lord Vishnu. Anybody know how that happens? Vamanadeva, yes. Vishnu expands his Vamanadeva, pokes the universe. The celestial Ganges comes in, washes his feet. And then Mahaprabhu said, so that foot wash from Lord Vishnu, where does it go? Lord Shiva takes it on his head. We've all seen the picture of Lord Shiva. Water is pouring onto his head. This is the celestial Ganges. He's receiving it, and then it comes to the other planets. So if he's the topmost, why is he taking the foot wash of Lord Vishnu on his head? So this is very important to understand. So to this point, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, give me one moment here. There we go. So to this point, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has composed a very wonderful selection of verses. And the selection of verses is called the Shivastikam, 8 prayers in glorification of Lord Shiva, which I'm just coming to. You'll have to excuse me. I get used to using this, having everything like this. Oh, you're all leaving. And I didn't get a chance to ask you. I'm coming to your class, lady. You ask me the question when I come to your class, okay? All righty. So here we go, Shivastikam. Shivastikam of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I perpetually offer my obeisances unto you, the Lord of the 30 primal devas, who are the original father of created beings, whose character is gracious, upon whose head, which is crested by the sickle moon, the Ganges springs, and who are a festival for the eyes of Gauri, the fair goddess. I offer my obeisances to you, who resemble a moon of molten gold, who is dressed in garments covered like a group of budding blue lotuses, who bestows the most desirable boon to your devotees by your delightful dancing, who offers shelter to those who seek to become one with the transcendental effulgence of the Lord, and whose flag bears the image of a bull. I offer my obeisances to you who dispel the darkness with your 3 eyes. He has 3 eyes, the moon, the sun, and the fire. And thus you cause auspiciousness for all the living entities of the universe, and whose potency can easily defeat thousands of moons and suns. I offer my obeisances to you, whose form is brilliantly illuminated by the jewels of Anantadev, the king of the snakes, who possesses divine potencies and who is clothed in a tiger skin, who stands in the midst of a 1,000-petaled lotus and whose 2 arms are adorned by lustrous bangles. I offer my obeisances to you who bestow happiness to your servitors as you pour upon them the liquid nectar flowing from your reddish lotus feet, which have charming ankle bells ringing on them. Obeisances to you who are adorned with an abundance of gems. Please endow me today with pure love of Sri Hari. Here again, this is the prayer of Mahaprabhu requesting Lord Shiva, you're the topmost devotee, please give me love for Krishna. And of course, how can someone give Krishna love for Krishna? I mean, that's a very esoteric understanding, but the fact of the matter is that in his role as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's expressing this request. O Sri Ram, O Govinda, O Mukunda, O Sari, O Krishna, O Narayana, O Vasudev. I offer my obeisances unto you as well, Sri Shiva, who is the monarch king, ruling over the bee-like devotees who are mad to drink the nectar of these and other innumerable names of Hari, and who thus destroys all grief. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, Sri Shiva, who are forever inquired of confidentially by Sri Narada and other great sages, who very easily bestows boons on them, who bestows the happiness of Hari Bhakti to those who seek boons from you, who thereby create auspiciousness and thus is the guru of everyone. I offer my obeisances to you who are a festival of auspiciousness for the eyes of Gauri Devi, who are the lord of her life energy, who bestows rasa, and who is expert in forever singing songs with the eagerness of the pastimes of Govinda. Nice phrase, eagerness for the pastimes of Govinda. This should be our focus. This should be our mentality, that we're eager to hear the pastimes of Govinda. And then, of course, there's the Shrutipala. This is the blessing given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the end of this Shivastikam. A person who lovingly hears with rapt attention, 2 caveats there, the wonderful eightfold prayer to Sri Shiva can quickly attain Sri Hari Prem, as well as transcendental knowledge, the realization of that knowledge, and unprecedented devotional potency. So this final blessing has some very interesting points in it. First of all, there's two qualifications. Prabhupada often says if you want to see the president, you can't just walk into the president's office. You have to know someone who will introduce you and make the proper arrangements, and then you get an introduction, and then you can come in and sit down and speak. So there are always qualifications when we get these blessings, this mercy of the Lord. One of them is that we lovingly hear, and how do we lovingly hear? With rapt attention. That means not nodding off or letting our mind drift or checking our phones and all these types of things that we do, right? So when one does that and listens to these eight prayers, one can not only gain love for Sri Hari, but they get transcendental knowledge. So this is wonderful to get love for the Lord and transcendental knowledge, because that transcendental knowledge cultivates, as we say, bhakti vedanta in bhakti. The vedanta, the conclusion of vedanta, is bhakti. So, but in addition to that transcendental, so many people might have knowledge. Oh, I read so many books. I have hundreds of books in my library. I've read them all. You can go to universities and find different religious departments where they have so many books on devotional topics, because so many of the Puranas and the Vedas, and even in some cases, Srila Prabhupada's own books, due to the efforts of the Library Party in the 70s. But that knowledge by itself is not sufficient. Realization of that knowledge, what we refer to as gyan and vigyan, to have knowledge but to know what to do with it. If we have some knowledge, well, I looked on YouTube and I saw how to connect my water heater, but I don't really know how to do it because there's these details that aren't clear to me. So then you need a plumber to come in and tell you, okay, no, you have to disconnect this first so you don't shock yourself. Take that wire off. Turn the water off here, because if you unloosen it here, you're going to have water. So someone that gives that realization of the knowledge, that has that realization, lets us understand these things. So not only knowledge, but the practical use of that knowledge. For us, as I mentioned earlier, we have the knowledge of bhakti, but we want to share it. This is the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the preaching mission of Srila Prabhupada. And as their followers, we have an obligation to share that knowledge, the realization, the practical application of that knowledge, and additionally, unprecedented devotional potency. That's really powerful. To have some potency in what you do, that's great. To have some devotional potency, that means you can accomplish it. But some unprecedented devotional potency, I wonder if that word is, apurva bhaivanam. No, apurva bhaivavam. Apurva bhaivavam, unprecedented opulence. So we can have unprecedented opulence in the way of wealth and cars and homes and bank accounts and so on and so on and so on. Or we can have spiritual unprecedented opulence. And that will give us the ability to advance nicely in Krishna consciousness. So these are the prayers that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself has given, that he's actually put there for our benefit, and that we can actually make some benefit from hearing them. Now, there's a nice example in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Brihat Bhagavatamrita has a, let me get over to here. There we go. As I mentioned, I'm working out how to go this route. I'm not sure I like it, but we'll figure it out. In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni is trying to find out who is the most blessed devotee, who's got more mercy from the Lord than anyone else. So he starts by approaching the devotee And then he's referred on and on up the line. And eventually he's referred to Lord Shiva. So when he approaches Lord Shiva, and he's sent to Lord Shiva by Brahma, his father, who's also his guru, and Brahma tells him, you're qualified to do this. You can find him. So he approaches Lord Shiva, and as he approaches, Lord Shiva is engaged in kirtan with his followers. So we shouldn't think that Lord Shiva is not doing anything. He engages in kirtan very nicely. So in engaging, while engaging in that kirtan with his followers, Narada Muni comes in, and he addresses him as the most, the biggest recipient, the most merciful person, the person who's gotten the most mercy from the Lord. And Lord Shiva doesn't agree with this. He says, no, this isn't me. He actually says, you know my story. You know what I've done. You know, and he begins to talk about some of the activities, some of the blessings that he's given, to different devotees. He doesn't embrace this glorification is the main point here. He doesn't embrace this glorification. He takes the humble road, and he says, no, it's... it's the associates here that they actually have the devotion. And so Lord Shiva eventually sits down with Narada, and they begin to discuss, and Narada offers obeisances to him and then begins to recite various prayers glorifying Lord Shiva, some of which we've just recited here. And Sanatan Goswami, he describes in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Shiva becomes tired of this very quickly. Now, for most of us, if we sit down and somebody begins to, you know, speak very nicely of us, or, oh, that's all? You know, some more things to say? Can I supply you with a few? You know, our ego is quite large, and we appreciate hearing ourselves glorified. But Lord Shiva doesn't like this at all. What does he do? He covers his ears. He covers his ears. He says, I am not the object of Krishna's mercy. I am just a poor soul who was always hankering to be graced by the mercy of the servants of the servants of the Lord. This is Shiva's mood, that no, I just want the mercy from the devotees. This is exactly what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes famous in his Gopi Bhartur Padakamalaya Dasa Dasa Dasa, the servant of the servant of the servant of the devotees. Now, Narada becomes a little bewildered by this, and he begins to think, did I offend Shiva or something? He's not accepting my praise. He's not, you know, so he then says in a very soft voice, he says, but in truth, you both understand and preach the glories and the mysteries of the Lord and his devotees. So back to this point of gyan and vigyan, you understand it, but you share it as well. And this qualifies you as being the recipient of Krishna's mercy. So Narada continues on like this, and, you know, he says, so many different words of praise and glorification. How many boons did this different devotees take from you? And, you know, it just goes on and on. And so he concludes by saying, certainly whatever I'm saying is true. And at this point, Shiva does something that we could use that word unprecedented in Vaishnava relationships. He rises from the seat, he walks over to Narada, and he puts his hand over his mouth. You know, sometimes as parents, you know, can you just be quiet? Okay, just shh. Okay, that's good. Yeah. No, please. And then sometimes, all right, look, just, you know. So Shiva actually does this to Narada. Puts his hand on his mouth and says, don't speak such reckless nonsense words. Reckless nonsense words. What's that word? Kukata, metigni, bad words that kill the intelligence. This is from elsewhere in the third canto. So this is how Shiva describes the glorification that he's receiving from Narada. Reckless, useless words. And then he says, instead, just hear about the incomprehensible power of my Lord. This is also the humble mood of a devotee. They don't want praise for themselves, but they instead want to glorify the personality of Godhead. And then he begins to speak about, you know, the various demons that he has empowered or given benedictions to, Abanasura, and, you know, he goes on and on and on like this, you know, and describes all of these as disqualifications for him being one who has received the mercy of the Lord. And Narada still doesn't buy it. He instead gives further examples of how Krishna has actually blessed Lord Shiva. And he concludes again, I'm shortening all this, he concludes again by saying, I have seen all these things, and I know that you are the most loved of Lord Krishna. And with this, Lord Shiva somewhat accepts defeat, becomes a bit embarrassed, and he hangs his head. This is also a sign of humility, lowering one's head in front of some praise. Someone speaks nicely of you. You know, that's the phrase, puffed up. You know, you breathe in, your chest becomes a little full, you put your head back. Yeah. Yes, very appropriate. Thank you so much. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, no, Lord Shiva folds his hand and bows his head. No, this is unnecessary, you know. So this is the way he does this. He doesn't show his face directly. He lowers his glance, you know. And then he gives a handful of particular points here. But one very important point he mentions is how painful it is, not joyous, to hear my own description of my own activities. This again is the proper mood for a devotee. And he says, Narada, you're free of all pride, but instead I am the root of all pride. And then, you know, he begins to elaborate on this. He said, my job, my service is to destroy everything that Lord Vishnu has created. Well, Brahma creates, but under the auspices of Lord Vishnu, and then Vishnu maintains it. So when they want everything ruined, they call me in. So how am I such a great personality? You know? This is the service that I'm giving, and I'm very much ashamed of this. So in this way, we see that even in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a very important work of Sanatana Goswami, and a very wonderful book to read, we have this mood of Lord Shiva, not as the supreme, but this mood of Lord Shiva as a servant of the devotees, as one who wants to bless the devotees, who wants to give benedictions to the devotees, to assist them in developing love for Vrindavan, in developing love for Krishna, in developing deeper levels of devotion. So this is how we, as Vaishnavas, are easily able to embrace the worship of Lord Shiva. If we look further in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are several verses there also stating that this is the duty of a Vaishnava to worship Lord Shiva, but to worship him in the proper understanding. So there's also many prayers. There's Lord Shiva's prayers to learn Sringadeva, which are very interesting to read from the Garuda Purana. And then there's Lord Shiva's prayers to the gopis, also very interesting to read. We read these things, and when you read the prayers that someone has written, you can understand their mood. You can understand their inner thought. So this is very important that we understand who Lord Shiva is, how he fits into our Vaishnava understanding, and beg him for the mercy of blessing us with love for Krishna, love for Vrindavan. So we'll finish there with these few words on this purport today and a handful of statements about Lord Shiva. And I don't even need to ask. Her hand is already up. Mother Ragatmik is always keeping me on my toes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for elaborating on the glories of Lord Shiva, Prabhu. If his followers and he are always engaged in kirtan,
I didn't say always. I said they were engaged in kirtan at that point when Narada approached him.
Okay, and that's probably not all of his followers, because when he goes during the sandhyam, when he's going through the airs with his followers, so these followers aren't necessarily the ones who engage in kirtan.
Well, you know, we have a real nice six-hour kirtan here once a month. Not everybody comes, but we're all still followers of Srila Prabhupada. So, yeah, it might not be all of his followers. Matter of fact, we can pretty much assume it's not all of his followers quite safely.
And earlier you also said that a husband, when he performs devotional activities, the wife gets 50% of the merit.
That is the correct understanding.
And does it act in reverse?
Sure, why not? My wife's much more devotional than I am. I'll be happy to take 50% of her advancement. I know what side my bread's buttered on.
The wife gets 50% from the husband.
Where is that quote is a good question. I can find it. It's in Shastra. I don't have that particular reference right here. Yeah, yeah. Anyone else? All right. We'll finish the yes, Dasarath Prabhu over here. Dasarath Sutta.
Thank you, Guru, for enlightening class. Regarding Lord Shiva, our temple here is building a Shiva temple back in the eco farm. I don't know the projected time of completion, but we'll have Shiva here. Meanwhile, today is a very nice Shiva celebration at Hitakarna's place around the corner on 239. I don't know the timing on that, but that's a Shiva festival today. Regarding Shiva Ashtakam, you read, is that the one from Murari Gupta's Sri Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya?
That is exactly where it comes from, yes.
Okay, yes. Jai Balaram and I spent 6 months translating that. And the trivia with Murari Gupta's book is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he had collected many, many rare shastras from many libraries, old libraries. He never found a copy of Murari Gupta's book, which is the first biography of Mahaprabhu,
correct,
also written in Sanskrit instead of Bengali, like Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Bhaktisiddhanta wrote, he never found one. So some years after his departure, somebody found one somewhere and published it, and then it became known. I got hold of a really old copy. And because there's only one manuscript, normally our Gaudiya Shastras are published what's called a critical edition, which means you compare 3, 4, or 5 different manuscripts. There's a little footnote. This word means a different word in manuscript number C, you know, like that. So we don't have any critical edition of Chaitanya Charita by Murari Gupta. So, and there's parts of verses are missing. Sometimes the entire line is missing because the manuscript was all broken, falling apart. So when we translate that kind of shlok, you just have to put, you know, a phrase that you can see, and then you just put ellipsis, dot, 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 where the verse is missing, and then the bottom of the verse is there, and then you just add that. So that's the history of Chaitanya Charita. So what I did was I extracted the Shivashtakam and typed it up. This is 30 years ago in the 90s. I extracted the Shivashtakam out of there and mailed it everywhere. Before email, we were sending it out with you know, a piece of paper in a thing called an envelope. Like a horizontal rectangle thing made of paper.
Back in the day.
So that Shivashtakam is, I guess it's viral now. It's probably all over the place. So that was part of our history in Nectar Books to be able to get hold of that rare copy and present that to the world. Now I think Ras Bihari Lal publishes it. Big fat Chaitanya Charita.
Yeah, I've seen
so
that.
So you can find the Shivashtakam in there.
Thank you for that insight on that. All right, thank you all very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna.